56 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, unfortunately, Tom can't join us this week. He's in the cooler. But I'm joined today by Dana Nachman, award-winning documentary filmmaker. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure being able to talk to someone with your insight to how to make movies. Hopefully, we'll have a fun week where we'll be able to really check out some interesting things about the way that Sturgis made this movie.
Sounds good.
All right. So episode 56 starts off with Von Luger saluting Ramsey and walking away, and goes all the way till Mac starts giving a bunch of goodies to Henley. So basically this minute continues the conversation that the officers were having in the garden that we discussed last week. Basically you have, Ramsey, Mac, Ashley Pitt, and Roger standing there doing their gardening, and Von Luger comes along with both Posen and Strachwitz, and they have a little conversation about the gardening. So we basically just get the tag end here, and basically all three officers, all three German officers salute the British, and then they walk away, which, again, this is something that really fascinates me, the fact that there's some sort of, code of conduct between the officers here, that even though, we're dealing with jailers and prisoners, they still have respect for one another. They're still able to, salute one another, give them the credit that they, I guess, that they earned, or however you want to look at it from that perspective. And then at that point, Ashley Pitt makes a very interesting comment. He says, I have a nasty feeling he knows exactly what we're doing. And the response that Roger gives is that maybe he does. And then Ashley Pitt responds once again with, you don't really think so now, do you? So it sounds as if he's pretty much contradicting himself here with the way that he's talking about this. Ashley Pitt, on the one hand, brings up the idea that, he doesn't say it in a sarcastic way. Or maybe actually at the beginning, maybe he does say it in a sarcastic way. What do you think, Dana?
I think probably what they're doing for the film is trying to up the stakes. They're constantly involved in this cat and mouse game. And so they're trying to make sure that the stakes for that are front and center all the time. So this is I don't know how long it's been exactly since the last time they've done that, but this is doing it again. And so it's either creating kind of like doubt in the mind of the audience, their lack of self-confidence kind of affects the audience. But I think that they're trying to up the stakes here and make us worried for the most part.
All right, that actually makes a lot of sense, that Sturgis would do something like that, or when they wrote the script that they would do that. And then Ramsey's response to all that is, well, we'll find out soon enough, which is great foreshadowing. Because, as you mentioned, this is a great cat-and-mouse chase between both sides throughout the entire movie. Both sides are showing that we're dealing with two intelligent bases, that the one side, they're trying to plan the escape and execute it, and the other one they're trying to stop it, and I guess you could also execute them.
Yeah, and the stakes are, I think like good movies have stakes kind of baked into their plots, and this obviously does. I mean, the whole thing is about an escape, right? So so they just want to kind of keep that going the whole time, and the stakes are high for the Germans too. They can't just let people willy-nilly out of their prison camps, so it's important.
Right. And I mean, what's interesting is that in the original script, that this scene doesn't end at this point. It continues with Von Luger, and we see that he goes to the gate. And as he gets to the gate, he bumps into Soren, who then Von Luger says to him, okay, you can check me out now. And Soren goes, what? Beg your pardon, sir? And he goes, let me have your list. Now, a little background on this. In the original story, one of the things that they did was is they put a lot of they had a prisoner duty officer or whatever that was standing close to the front gate and keeping track of when the soldiers are coming in and out of the compound, how long they're staying in the compound for and things like that. And so the fact that the original script deals with that is great, because here we have Von Luger basically understanding that that's what they're doing. They're keeping track of when he's coming in and out. And, he says to Soren, basically, you can mark down that I've left the compound. and then Von Luger basically asks for the list. And, Soren doesn't want to give it to him. And then he decides to hand it over. And then Von Luger smiles, glances at the list of his guards, so then he can see their times of when they've come in and out. And then he looks at his watch, and then he marks down you know, under his name he writes out and the time that that he's walking out, and then he hands it back. And then he says to Von Luger, "Give my compliments to Group Captain Ramsey. Ask him if I can have a daily copy. It would be most useful to have an independent, trustworthy report of the movements of my men." I mean, this is just a fascinating part of the story that I'm really shocked that they kept out. Because what they're basically saying here is that Von Luger is not only knows that they're keeping track of all this, but he wants to use it to his benefit.
Yeah, so was that part supposed to come before the exchange? About that they know it was supposed to come before the exchange. Maybe they know what we're doing. So...
No. He says that if we knows, if he does, we'll find out soon enough. And then it goes to that. So it at that point, it would actually also raise the stakes because they're basically telling us that, okay, he knows something's going on. You know, he knows you're keeping track of when the guards are coming in and out. And as a, it's interesting because as like an executive, you know, he's wondering himself, are his men efficient enough?
Right.
You know, here he has an independent, you know, he's able to get an independent report of when his men are coming in and out of the compound, you know, what they're doing, you know, are they spending too much time in the compound or not enough time? And, you know, that's an interesting way to inspect what your, underlings are doing.
And your prisoners are doing some of the work for you.
Exactly. And the line that he says that it's great to have an independent and trustworthy report. You know, meaning he knows that what they're writing is truthful here.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't just a BS thing that they're just keeping track of it. They're methodically making notes of when people are coming in and out.
Right.
No, I just find it interesting. You know, a lot of times, as you probably know this as a director, you know, when you're going through, you know, the film and you're deciding what needs to be cut and what not. So you're going to cut something that you don't think is as integral to the plot.
Right.
Which shocks me because this sounds like something that would be integral.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what they were thinking with this? I mean, I could see it being, I mean, obviously it wasn't integral really because, like, if you don't ever, it just depends how many other scenes they had that connected to that keeping track of the whereabouts of the guards. If it was like a one-off, like sometimes you're like, okay, well that can go. Like, I mean, you know, who knows? It was such a long movie that, you know, sometimes you just do stuff for your cuts for time, you know? And I don't, you know, I mean, this is such a long movie. I don't know for the time if it was such a long movie, but I mean, now this only certain directors could get away with this kind of length. But you know, were they, what was it again? Was it 2.5 hours, the total running time?
The 172 minutes. It's the 252 minutes.
You would know that.
It's 2 hours and 52 minutes.
2 hours. I mean, so like, what did they say? Like you cannot go above 255 or something. Like they had to make a cut somewhere, you know? And so, who knows? They could have done it for time. They could have also done it for, you know, sometimes there's just too many tentacles and you have to sort of say, okay, like the audience doesn't want to work hard to keep track of everything that's happening. And so maybe they felt like that would just be too much. You know, just we didn't need that one little kind of offshoot of the plot.
That's true. It could also be that they're looking at it from the perspective that maybe they don't want to make Von Luger more sympathetic than he already is.
Yep. Or maybe they had a technical error with that scene and it didn't look good or something happened. You just don't know. It's very interesting. I mean, I think that's why, you know, DVD extras used to be so fascinating and interesting to get into because you could kind of get in the mind of the director. There's a million reasons why something makes it or doesn't make it. Maybe the actors didn't do a good job on the delivery of it. You just don't know.
Right. Sure. We'll never know. We can just, you know, postulate and wonder.
Yep.
And, that's about as far as we can get with this. So that ends that scene. And then, we get to see, Mac walking through the compound and he walks by what looks like a kiosk. As always, this is one of the first times I've actually noticed, you know, in the back that it looks like, you know, they're selling things. You know, you have prisoners standing there, you know, get your, you know, I don't know, they're selling ices or they're selling, you know, hot chocolate. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, obviously, when you try and look at what they have there, it looks more like they have, it's hardware. You know, it looks like they have paint and, you know, a hose and a whole bunch of baskets carrying other types of supplies. Yeah. So, and there's also like there's a blue vase, which looks like a, you know, a Ming vase or something like that, which, you know, I don't really know what use someone would have for that in the compound. But it's amazing the amount of detail. Most films wouldn't even bother to do this. You know, he's just walking by a closed barracks. Why do you need to have this there unless you want to try to show how busy this whole compound is, that there's so much going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it also adds a lot to the frame. Like if you know, kind of wait till he walks by, till he's almost past it, you see that not only is there stuff happening inside the canteen or whatever that is, but there's soldiers behind there and then the forest. It's just a very layered situation, you know, which I think does say that it's very busy and lots going on. But then I think there's also somebody kind of leaning on the building or just walking slowly. Like there's a lot happening there. And I think, you know, if he had walked by just a solid, you know, kind of wall there, it would look much less exciting. Yeah. Exciting.
Impressive.
And then, you know, I think that they obviously like lit the inside of that canteen too. You know, it has a kind of glowing sort of warm lighting situation in there. So they did take a lot of time with it. And I think the shot is awesome and beautiful. Most of it.
Yeah. And they also established that it just rained because you have puddles of rain on the ground, a little bit of mud, you know, trying to show that not everything is all sunny and fun.
Right.
And what's interesting, it's a little bit hard to tell what he's carrying. When I first saw it, I thought he was carrying like some sort of Filofax or something like that, you know. But find out in a few seconds, he's basically holding a box that has a lot of goodies in it.
Yeah.
And so he opens the door and comes into the room and see it shifts to a shot of Hendley doing something on the side of his closet, which if you take a quick look, you see that he's actually putting a lock on his closet. So he's got a very handy Swiss Army knife that he's able to put on a lock. I mean, obviously Henley is the character who's able to get anything and everything that's needed. You know, getting a lock from somewhere is not that difficult for him. But it's interesting that they actually show him put this lock on the closet.
Yeah, it's like he's prepping for the scene. You know, prep for the next steps. He knows it's happening, and he's doing his part.
Right, but it also shows that he's somewhat concerned that there's a possibility that someone might try and steal what he's putting inside his closet. So there's a reason for that.
Right, but wouldn't that cause, you know, if a guard were to come in, wouldn't he wonder why there's a lock on there? I mean, I would.
That's a good, very good question. But he's friends with Werner, so you never know. Maybe Werner will let it slide.
Right.
Maybe Werner will think that his wallet is stuck in there somewhere.
Right.
You know, that's actually a very good point. I didn't even think about that fact that the guards would be a little suspicious of that. I mean, as most people know, you know, you generally need to hide your stuff whenever you're in even when you're in sleepaway camp or whether you're in the military or whatever it is. You know, you got to make sure that all your supplies are properly secured so that someone's not just going to lift it.
Right.
Without you knowing.
Lots of people around.
Yeah. So Mac then enters the room. And at this point, what's interesting is that they refer to each other by their first names. Now, throughout most of the movie, the characters are all referring to themselves by their last names.
Right.
You know, and at this point, you know, Mac walks in and I mean, everyone calls him Mac. And he goes, "Morning, Bob." And then, you know, I think this is the first time that we actually hear that Henley's first name is Bob. And then he responds back, "Hi, Andy," you know, which again, so now we know that he's Andy McDonald and he's Bob Henley.
Right.
So it's just interesting that they chose at this point to make them less formal with what they're doing. I guess partially it has to do with what they're about to be dealing with here. You know, this is very sensitive things that are inside this box. So Mac puts the box down and starts taking an inventory of everything he's taking out. So he says, "All right, we got two packets of biscuits, we got two tins of coffee, we got Bovril, which is one jar of Bovril." Yeah, do you have any idea what Bovril is?
Nope.
All right, well, I looked it up, and what it is it's like a spread. You know, it's sort of I don't want to say it's a British version of peanut butter, but it's basically it's a meat extract that's used to spread on bread, and you know you can also use it to make a drink out of it by diluting hot water or sometimes milk in order to It was used for flavoring in soups, in broths, stews, porridge, and you know it's like Marmite or Vegemite that they would spread on toast or bread or whatever it is. So that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I've seen this movie so many times that I never paid attention to the word Bovril. You know, I'd never even heard of it. And probably if I think about it a week from now, I won't remember, you know, what it is, besides the fact that it's some sort of spread.
You'll be good at Trivial Pursuit if it comes out one day.
I have a feeling that that's not going to be a question in Trivial Pursuit. You know, like, what jar of did Mac take out of the box in The Great Escape? Oh, Bovril.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, you know, 6 packets of cigarettes, and then he's got strawberry jam, and he starts telling him where all these things came from. You know, strawberry jam that came from Soren, and then he says black currant jam from Cavendish. Now, have you ever heard of black currant? Do you know what that is?
I've heard of it, but I don't know if I've ever had it. I think I've seen it in jam or...
Right. Apparently it was something that it's a type of spread. It's got like it's a fruity sauce that's used a lot of times in cooking roast duck or things like that. It was actually banned in the U.S. for a long time, for over a century, because it was something that was causing something known as white pine blister rust that was threatening the U.S. logging industry.
Huh.
And so because it's something that originally came from Europe. So the original colonies, you know, back in the 18th century, they were actually, it was used quite often. And then at one point they decided to ban it because it was causing problems for the logging industry. Based on what I've read, it's more popular now in the States than it was, but it only came back within the last 15, 20 years, something like that. Which means that when this movie was made in 1963 or 1962, I'm assuming most people had no idea what blackcurrant jam was. Yeah.
That's interesting. One thing I think is funny about this is right after that, when he reaches back into his cabinet there, it's funny because he doesn't look, right? Like, so that, I wonder how many takes it took him to do that. Like, like a normal person would look. Right, but he was obviously told.
I think it's to make his character seem as more of a know-it-all. You know, he can do whatever he wants. He knows he just has to reach behind, and he knows that he's able to bring this tin out.
I feel like that must have taken a lot of doing.
James Garner is a professional actor, so you never know. Maybe they just told him once. Maybe they didn't even tell him to do it. Maybe he ad-libbed it, and they liked it so much they decided to keep it in.
Yeah, I can imagine like many bloopers with him like knocking the thing, and like I think that's like a 10 to 8.
Yeah, that's true. Because you know, he could jam his hand into the bottom part of the closet, you know, and hit his jacket instead of that's a good point. And that's pretty much everything that happens in this minute, because he pulls out the jar, but we don't know yet what's in that jar. What's in the jar? What's in the jar? Isn't that a famous sentence? Isn't that a saying or something like that?
I don't know, but we will find out tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. you want to come back tomorrow?
Sure.
All right. Excellent. So why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. Well, I think the best thing is my website, because you can see all my films and contact me. It's Dana Nachman, NACHMAN.com.
Okay, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and stuff on any podcatcher that you're using to listen to the show. You can send us an email, thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And you can contact us by Twitter at Great Escape MXM. So until tomorrow, tally ho.
Tally ho.